Welcome to Aetherius Radio Live, the Hour of Truth, with Richard Lawrence and Chrissy Blades.
A very warm welcome to listeners of Aetherius Radio Live and those of you who are new. This is brought to you on Body, Mind, Spirit Radio every third Tuesday of the month. Discover the cosmic message for this age, revealed through legendary master of yoga and world-renowned medium Dr. George King between 1954 and 1997. Now, today, your hosts, Richard Lawrence and Chrissy Blaze, will be discussing in depth and revealing some truly awe-inspiring facts. Wait for it. The Master Jesus wants us to realize our divinity. So without further ado, I hand you over to Richard and Chrissy.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hello,
thank you,
Chrissy.
Very much. Hi,
thank
Richard.
You, Nikki.
Thanks, Nikki. Really looking forward to this show.
Yes, the Master Jesus wants us to realize our divinity. And that's so much his message, isn't it, Chrissy?
It is, absolutely. Yes, I hadn't realized actually before we had discussions about it and you shared with me some of your revelations on this topic and the prayers, the 12 blessings and other prayers too, that I realized that. But now that I have, I mean, it's really very exciting.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, you know, these are beautiful, beautiful, often very poetic words by the Master Jesus, often in a sort of 17th century English kind of a style. And for what he must have chosen that for a very definite reason, I'm sure. And it's a beautiful language. That's the period of Shakespeare and other great poets, of course. But underneath that, though, is a very deep meaning. And it struck me, it really hit me literally for six, actually, Chrissy, when I realized that six out of the nine prayers that are in the 12 blessings are focused on praying for humanity to realize our divinity.
Yes, and we're going to go into those prayers today.
We are.
And it's very interesting to me about the Master Jesus, because we talked about this and he did indeed demonstrate the highest expression of the last age, the Piscean age, and his teachings of love and service. And as you say, Richard, inner realization of spiritual necessities for this Aquarian age.
That's interesting. You should say that, Chrissy. And you being the astrologer and me being the ignoramus on astrology. I think it's interesting because last week did I interrupt you, by the way, there, Chrissy?
Oh, no, it's just that Master Jesus referred to this as the age of science.
Right.
And in this wonderful quote he gave, which is actually one of my favorite quotes, he talked about how science by itself is like the soul is wandering in the realms of night. So it needs this warmth of love, of this inner realization,
yes,
and so forth, to come forth into this age. I think that's such an interesting
point. Yeah, that's true. Now, last week on Friday, March the 15th, we celebrated the birth on earth of the beloved Master Jesus. Many of us, there'll be many Aetherius Radio Live listeners who joined in that celebration in one part of the world or another, some in groups, some at home alone, depending how they observed it. And he was and is, as you rightly say there, Chrissy, the Master of Love, who came to herald in the Piscean Age 2,000 years ago and demonstrate controlled emotion, the power of love. But now, as you're pointing to, we're on the cusp, at least, well, you can correct me if I'm wrong there when I call it the cusp, of the Aquarian Age. And he's brought new teachings to us, especially the 12 blessings, of course. But this is the point. Although he heralded in and demonstrated, because that was his mission, or part of his mission, the highest expression of the Piscean age, when he walked among us physically, he himself is not a Piscean master per se, because he, of course, isn't limited to any of the terrestrial star signs. He's a Venusian intelligence. He was obviously ideally suited and chosen and requested to perform that particular mission at that particular time and did it outstandingly. Perfectly, I would say. But He himself encompasses, of course, in his great mastery, all the signs. And the focus, I would say, Chrissy, of the 12 blessings, yes, there's the love element, very, very important, the radiation of power, the dispensation of energy, but also very profound, extremely mystical, and very advanced, actually, groundbreaking on this world, teachings, which is more of an Aquarian approach, is it not?
Absolutely, yes. And I agree with what you say about the Master Jesus not being the master just for the age of Pisces. And in fact, that what he taught, I believe, is going to be brought forward into all the ages going forward. Not all, well, yes, all the ages going forward. And they will be, they will manifest in different and higher ways, if you like, as mankind learns different aspects to raise consciousness in different ways in this age of science. As the Master Jesus said, it will become a tool in the hands of everlasting divinity, not that soulless thing which you've made of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, great. So over and over again, the Master Jesus calls upon us, not only in the 12 blessings and the prayers in the 12 blessings, but also in many of his transmissions and his comments before and after the 12, each of the blessings sometimes. He's calling upon us to realize our divinity. And that's what we want to talk about today. That must be what he wants us to do. And of course, if we do it, he knows that everything will change upon earth and change permanently, which is a key point. And he's prophesying at the end of the sixth blessing, a prayer actually, that we will, that will happen. For this shall come to pass upon earth is a prophecy. And that's a wonderful thing to know. Now, of the nine prayers he gives us to use in the 12 blessings, as I six of them do this, and they do it in different ways. It might be to realize our divinity. It might be to realize our divine heritage. Very interesting statement, heritage. To realize the glory of thine everlasting being, a glimpse of themselves. They may have a glimpse of themselves, because that's often the focus in yoga. For example, in Yogananda, self realization, that self being our real self, our divine self, to realize thy presence, to experience oneness with thee. These are some of the phrases that he is calling us to do. And we are saying those prayers, and some listeners to this show, I know for a fact, do these prayers every single day of their lives. And some of them have done that for decades. And of course, that means it will start to cause a movement among humanity, not only on this realm, but this is the realm that in some ways is the most significant, karmically speaking, to do that very thing. And of course, those of us saying those prayers also, and I think this is something I should say, should be intent also on striving to realize our divinity. Otherwise, it's a bit strange to be praying for everybody else to do it and not being trying to do it ourselves. Don't you think, Chrissy?
Richard, I think that's an excellent point, actually. And I have to admit, it's not one that I've thought about previously. And I think other people might be able to relate to what I'm going to say. But I find it easier to pray for others to realize their divinity than to strive to realize that myself all the time. So this is definitely not only food for thought, but food for action. Very, very important.
But and I will say, of course, that from a karmic point of view, by praying for others to do it, then we must at some point be given the opportunity to do it ourselves, because we are changing our karma. The question is, will we take that opportunity? You know, and I've met people over the years, Chrissy, who've been very devoted servants of the path and have perhaps wondered sometimes why they're not getting more outstanding experiences or development or something like that. And then you ask them, well, do you actually do the practices? Do you leave yourself open? Do you strive? Have you determined? Have you decided to develop your spiritual, your psychic, your journey towards enlightenment abilities? And they say, oh, no, as though that's something that's just going to happen. So it's yes, we can manipulate the karma, we can serve others, and we should. That's the priority. But when the opportunities do come to us, we must take them. If we don't, we can't wonder why nothing's happening.
Absolutely, Richard. And I hope you don't mind me asking this, but I was so impressed recently that you shared a very, very sacred experience that you had that I think you call entry-level cosmic consciousness. And that one aspect of sharing it, I think, was very, very important for all of us. And it must have been difficult for you to share. So I know we'll talk about that more later, but I just wanted to bring that up since you're referring to these things.
Well, of course, the master set, I mean, I make no comparison because there is no comparison between a flawed, idiotic terrestrial person like myself and the great avatar, Dr. George King. But he set the example, he shared things. And as he often said, you do lose something when you do that. And sometimes people don't understand it. And sometimes people might even question it. And that isn't, I mean, I couldn't care less, to be honest, what anybody thinks about that at all. Whether they believe it or not, or aren't sure, all of that's fine with me. But it's not really what you want. So I completely understand the master saying, obviously, you do lose something when you share things. But the experiences I had a couple last year, and the one you're referring to was more recently, and I wrote a blog on it about cosmic realization. I believe they were given to me, they happened for me, not mainly for my own benefit. It was incumbent upon me to share them and just offer them to people for their consideration. And I want to say straight away here, and I want to make it absolutely clear, this is not an Aetherius Society teaching, my experiences. It's not incumbent upon members of the Aetherius Society or anybody else to accept it or believe it. This is something I'm offering to people who can see that it's true and can benefit from it. And if they decide no, that's okay too. It's certainly not an official Aetherius Society teaching. I have to make that very clear, Chrissy.
Well, I'm very appreciative that you did share it. And I think it's very generous of you because I know I hope you don't mind me saying, you're a very sensitive person, and something so sacred as that, it must have taken a lot. And so I just want you to know how appreciated it is by myself and many other people too, because it's very encouraging. It gives us hope. You know, I know you've always been a very inspired person and you've worked very hard over many decades and you've taken on masses of responsibility and you've had initiations and all those things. But still, you've had to work hard at this, I'm sure. Is that correct, Richard, just to achieve that?
Well, what happened really, yeah, thank you for that. And I'm certainly not alone, you and others. And I was very lucky that when I had the experience, we were actually in a place called the Canary Isles, some will know it. And I was with my wife and she's been incredibly supportive, had her own experiences as well, by the way. And that was absolutely crucial to me. But I will say that it occurred to me about a year ago, just over, that I was fortunate. I had more, let's say, a unique combination of initiations directly from our master, Dr. George King. That's just a fact. I don't say I deserved them, but it's just the way he determined it. And, you know, also I've had more responsibilities given to me by Dr. King personally than anybody else has ever and will ever have in the Aetherius Society. So I thought to myself, well, you know, I've been doing this for decades. And people could look at it and they could think, well, look, Richard Lawrence had all this and he hasn't entered Samadhi. He hasn't got there, as it were. What chance have I got? That's a thought I had. And it was a real spur to action. And I decided, and it just came out, look, you can do this. And I'm very old to be doing it, frankly, you know, at the age of 69 and 70 were the last one. It's not really advised in yoga circles to be trying to do these things at that age, I don't think. But I thought, right, okay. I for that reason, I want to try and do it. I thought I can do it, but it was a determination. It was a decision. It didn't just sort of happen one afternoon. I thought I'm going to set out and try and do this. And I found that I could. Now, I want to be absolutely clear, really, on one or two points. First of all, the samadhi that I gained, and I think this is relevant to what we're talking about, because in a sense, the Master Jesus, when we pray for man and women on earth to realize their divinity, we're really praying for them to enter samadhi. Ultimately, that's what we're praying for. That is when you do realize your divinity more fully. And I was determined to set out to do this. And I think that it can be done by anybody who follows the path sufficiently. But I can't say it will happen to everybody in this life. And I want to stress here, and Dr. King also stressed here, you can have great experiences below that level, you might put it that way. But also, it must be clear that what I entered is not anywhere near the level that Dr. King entered. I am not a master. I am not an adept. And to be honest, I'm very happy to say that. I mean, that may not be a good thing that I'm happy to say that, but I am, and I don't want any misunderstandings here. So the absolutely outstanding descriptions of samadhi by Dr. George King, and he describes it in uniquely brilliant detail and technical detail. You can read about it in the Nine Freedoms. You can hear it in his lectures. He had a complete and entire rise of the mystic force of Kundalini from the lower centers through each center in turn, fully to the highest centers. I didn't. And I don't think many people, many of whom are called masters, and one example being the wonderful Paramahansa Yogananda, I don't think many people on earth, terrestrial people, have had a full and complete and entire rise of Kundalini, even if they think they have, as Dr. King did. I'm very aware. I'm absolutely very aware. I call it entry-level cosmic consciousness. And if people aren't familiar with that, certainly in this country anyway, when people go for a job and they're an absolute novice, they're an entry-level employee. So it was a state, but it's a very, very junior one. And likewise, earlier I said I dipped my toe in the ocean of samadhi. And it's what the yogis called in the old days, samadhi with seed. Now, when Dr. King defines samadhi, even when he defines meditation, he takes it to the heights. He takes it higher than anyone I've ever come across or read from. In fact, if you look at Sri Patanjali, who's the father of the journey to samadhi, really, or if you look at any of the great yogis, Vivekananda, Sivananda, just to name two right there, they break down samadhi into various categories. And there are two really big categories. One is samadhi with seed and the other is seedless. Now, seedless samadhi would be where you, as I mentioned earlier, raise the kundalini and all the energies from every center entirely upwards and into the highest centers. Samadhi with seed, of which there are various types, and in the aphorisms of Patanjali, many samadhis are described below that level. That's something else. And I've taken a great interest in this because of this experience, as you can imagine. And I think the way that Mars Sector 6 describes it in the Nine Freedoms is absolutely brilliant. I think it's actually better even than Patanjali. And I was fortunate, I had a number of spiritual conversations personally with Dr. King. And so that's didn't happen to everybody. I've found out since his passing. It's fairly unusual. One of them was about Sri Patanjali. It wasn't a long one, but he told me that Patanjali came to Earth to deliver these aphorisms. And they're known by some as the eight limbs of yoga. And you won't find in that school of, say, Raja Yoga and yoga in general, that anyone really deviates from them. I've noticed in translating them, they do try to water them down and make them easier and less demanding, but they don't deviate from the concepts that he brought. And when Dr. King said this to me, what came over from him to me was that these aphorisms existed and Sri Patanjali was the avatar from another planet who was best equipped to look at the condition of humanity as we are and as we were then and describe the quickest route from where we are to samadhi. And that's basically what is done through the eight limbs of yoga. Now, there are many changes, and the biggest one by far being the overriding priority of world service, which is completely missing from the aphorisms of Patanjali. So they do need upgrading. But nevertheless, Dr. King did once say, and I'm not quoting exactly, but he did say that in the new age, which we're talking about very much tonight or today, that the aphorisms of Patanjali will be put into practice by people, which is an interesting statement in a different way, obviously with the different priorities. As I mentioned, I'll name another one. In the aphorisms of Patanjali, people are told to be full of joy when there is goodness. That's a great thing. That's still a great thing. But when there is evil, to be indifferent. Now we're told to fight the evil, not with weapons, not with physical weapons, with truth and with light and with energy. So that's another change. So there are changes and there are reprioritizations, but the main essence of them still applies. Now, Mars Sector 6, as I mentioned, I think words it even better in the Nine Prims. He doesn't talk about samadhi with seed and seedless samadhi. He talks, and it's in the sixth freedom, about the power still being warm in these places. So even after the Kundalini is risen to a high center, be it the Christ center, or in this case, he's talking about cosmic consciousness to the crown center. He says, in many that you regard, and this is all from memory, I haven't got it in front of me, so if I get a few words wrong, please forgive me. But the essence is, in many that you regard as masters and adepts, the power is still warm in these places. Bingo, as we say in England. Sorry, that's spot on. That is it. That's, I believe, Yogananda. I've had a conversation also, I'm fortunate enough to say, with Dr. King about Yogananda's wonderful description of cosmic consciousness, about his book as well. But he did certainly agree with me that Yogananda himself wasn't a master. Now, having said that, there are many people who would call him a master on this earth. And that's the point Mars Sector 6 makes. And many that you would regard as masters and adepts, the power is still warm in these places. I believe that's another way of another approach, a Kundalini chakra-based approach to the concept of samadhi, which is with seed, as opposed to seedless samadhi. So in a person like me, and the reason for this long preamble, is it's very much the power is still warm in these places. I would say very warm. So, and a lot of seed. So, you know, I've got a long way to go. Whereas in the case of Dr. King, he rose everything. That's why he needed this thin band of heat around his forehead to stop rigor mortis setting in. Where have you ever come across such a description as that? It shows his total precision. He was a master of mastery. I mean, in his description of cosmic consciousness, he isn't satisfied with it. He isn't talking about imperturbable bliss. He actually experiences, as those who've read it, and I don't want to spoil it for those who haven't, but he stops it short. He doesn't allow it in this case to soar through the universe and the cosmos. That isn't to say he hasn't experienced that on other occasions, maybe even prior to this one. But he comes, brings himself back because he's aware of the suffering of the Mother Earth, which is, this is an outstanding lesson. He cuts it off, and that shows that he's a master of mastery. He's streets ahead of even people we call masters on Earth. Sorry about that long preamble there, Chrissy.
No, thank you so much, Richard. I think that was very helpful. And thank you for explaining more about your own experience and also, you know, relating that to the much higher experience of our master. But I just wanted to say that most of the listeners are probably quite aware, familiar with the description by Yogananda of cosmic consciousness.
Yes.
And I just wondered whether you feel that your experience was similar to that.
Well, I think it's on a similar level. Now, I will say that Yogananda was much younger than I was, and also add that Yogananda's experience, for those familiar with it, an autobiography of a yogi, was induced by his master, who touched him on the shoulder just above the heart. I believe it was. But, you know, just to give you a couple of lines, I've got it here in front of me. He says, a swelling glory within me began to envelop towns, continents, the earth, solar and stellar systems, tenuous nebulae and floating universes. The entire cosmos, gently luminous like a city seen afar at night, glimmered within the infinitude of my being. The dazzling light beyond the sharply etched global outlines faded slightly at the farthest edges, and so it goes on. So it was a total cosmic absorption. What I noticed in my humble experiences, and they are relatively trivial compared, as I want to stress here, to great avatars who've come to Earth and real genuine masters and ascended masters. But I did notice that when it was in the Christ Center, for me, and this is not a rule, I'm not saying this is going to happen to anyone else. I can't be dogmatic. I can only report what happened. I can't edit it. I can't alter it. I can just say what I experienced and what I induced and what it was fully done at will in this particular case. In my case, when it was taken up to the Christ Center, which I'd done some months earlier, for the first time ever in my life, it was all terrestrial experiences I had. It was mountains, it was pebbles, it was a badger, it was people on different realms. It was things to do with this earth. When it went higher to the crown center, or some of it went to the crown center, then it became cosmic. And may I say here, because a very senior person in the Aetherius Society has put it to me, you know, this I found very surprising, but I'm going to honor it, that he's worried, this person, he was worried, that some people may not understand what I wrote in that blog, which anyone can read. He himself believed it, and he understood it, but he was worried about that other people might not. So in the blog, I say things like this: I am Mars. I am another cosmic agency, something like that. Now, I do want to say, if it's really true that somebody didn't got that wrong, or he was worried, I think, that some people might think I'm walking around the street believing I'm Mars. I'm not quite sure, but let me just be clear here. I'm Richard Lawrence. When you're, and I'm an ordinary, flawed individual, and I'm not a master. That's what I am. But when you're in that state, you are at such a state of oneness with whatever it is you are identifying yourself with, knowing that I am divine spirit, of course, which is a much bigger claim, actually, than I am Mars, by the way. I am divine spirit. And people say that quite often in their affirmations. Nevertheless, when you're in that state, it's hard to describe. And this is purely 100% based on experience. It's not a theory. It's not a teaching. And I can only give you my take on it. If I was to say I am one with a tree, that suggests some separation, even in that statement, between me and the tree, because there's me and the tree being one. If you say I am the tree, there's no division. There's only one. And that's the best way I can try and explain what that means. And it only applies while you are in the state. And that, as far as I'm concerned, is how it happened, from my perspective, from my experience. So that was one thing I think this person felt I might need to explain to some people. I'm not sure if there are any that need it, but if they do, there you are. He also mentioned to me that this senior person in the Aetherius Society, that there is a state described in the ninth freedom as galactic consciousness. And I believe that's entered into a first time for 90,000 years. And he wanted to make sure that nobody thinks I'm claiming to have entered that state. So let me be very clear. I have not entered that state. I am not a solar lord. I am a humble punter. I am Richard Lawrence with many things to learn, unascended individual on this path. If anyone needed to hear that, it's not that state I'm talking about at all. And finally, I mentioned the fact that the reason why God had chosen to involve itself in matter was so that evolution could take place. And this person, the third concern, as best I can understand it, is that people might think I'm saying I have realized the why of existence as described in the seventh freedom and enjoyed by interplanetary masters. And such a thought, none of these thoughts cross my mind, I have to say, Chrissy, but I haven't realized the why of existence as described in the seventh freedom at all. That's an ancient piece of Nani Yoga. It's fairly known by people who studied the ancient Hindu texts, for example. It's what happened. You can believe something, you can have faith in something, such as I am divine spirit, or even something less than that. And then you can realize it. And it's even true of more basic things, such as personal love. You can believe in personal love, but then you have it and then you realize it. So there are many, many levels of realization on this journey. When the eighth freedom talks about meditation, it's not the meditation being described in the eight limbs of yoga. So apologies to all those people to whom this is obvious, what I'm saying, but in courtesy to this senior gentleman, I have now put that straight if anyone needed it, Chrissy.
Thank you so much for that, Richard. And believe it or not, we have come to the halfway mark. And so let's go back over to Nikki, our producer, for the announcements. Thank you.
Well, my goodness, what a superb first half of the show. And thank you very much, Richard and Chrissy, for such deep revelations. You are listening to Aetherius Radio Live with Richard Lawrence and Chrissy Blaise discussing The Master Jesus Wants Us to Realize Our Divinity. Now, we do have an activity which I'm very pleased to announce, which is on Saturday, March 23rd. There will be a wonderful class taken by Chrissy Blaise, and it's entitled Earth Goddess: Five Keys to Connecting with Her Sacred Power. And that will start at 2 p.m. and take place at the Eastern USA branch in Royal Oak. So do go to that one. She knows a lot. Chrissy knows a lot about that subject. So that'd be brilliant. And for other regular activities of the Aetherius Society worldwide, please visit aetherius.org for details of those held in your local area. Now, you are very welcome to join us on April 16th for another exciting Aetherius Radio Live show when more intriguing subjects will be discussed during this hour of truth. And by the way, that show is just 2 days before we are privileged to experience the holy presence of that floating, shining temple of light we know as Satellite Number 3. Speaking of which, April 18th, 12 midnight, GMT held in the first hour of the first spiritual push for 2024, when we will be able to welcome again into orbit of our Earth Satellite Number 3, which will be flooding our world with much needed spiritual energy. This spiritual push, or magnetization period, lasts until May 23rd, during which all spiritual actions performed with a selfless motive are enhanced by a factor of 3,000 times. The special service to mark this potent first hour will be live streamed from the Aetherius Temple in London and conducted by Richard Lawrence. You are warmly, as always, invited to join us for services both live stream and online and physically in our temples, especially during this very important period, and other social media events, details of which are on our website, aetherius.org. Well, that's it for now, and I'm very pleased to hand you back to Richard and Chrissy.
Thank you, Nikki. Richard, can I just, continuing from what we were talking about earlier, are you okay if I ask you a couple more questions about your experience?
Yes, but before you do, Chrissy, can I just say that this is going to be a two-parter, isn't it? Because we haven't done justice yet at all to the Master Jesus and what he wants. Although we are talking about that, and I'm very happy to answer these questions, absolutely, because, it's there for me to share. But can we agree, Chrissy, that we will at some point, maybe in the next show, or if not in another one, need to be doing a part two on this?
I think that would be a great idea, absolutely.
Yeah, because, you know, there were the six prayers, actually, about all the prayers in the 12 blessings. When Dr. King gave his lectures on these, he spoke very, very little about these prayers. I don't know if you've noticed that. And so they haven't been broken down. And it's very significant, I think, really. You know, we can say these beautiful words and know what they mean at a level, certainly. And that's, again, the point of knowing something at one level and realizing it at another. So, Chrissy, yeah, please do ask me whatever it is you want to. I don't know what you're going to ask me, but please be my guest.
No, you don't. I don't want to embarrass you, but a couple of things I've noticed, and this is truth, my truth, I suppose, but I know that you've always been a very inspired person ever since I've known you, since you were 18. But I've noticed...
That's you, by the way, Chrissy.
Well, thank you. I've noticed that in the last few shows, particularly, you're coming up with these revelations. Now, what I mean by revelation is that you come up with an idea like the one today, the Master Jesus wants us to realize our divinity. And when you say it, people would think, yes, well, that's obvious, you know, of course. But how many people would actually think about that? No, I know I did not think about that until you said it. So that I call that a revelation. It's helps people listening to raise their consciousness to think about these things. So my question is, do you feel that since you've had your cosmic consciousness experience that you have changed? Has it changed the way you think?
Absolutely, yes. One thing though, what I wondered, especially with the first time, because I had two, one wasn't cosmic, one was what I call dipping my toe in the ocean of samadhi, again a very novice level, but it was samadhi, and the second one was what I'm calling entry level cosmic consciousness. But I wondered, particularly after the first one, whether, okay, that's it, I've done it now. I wonder, you know, whether I'm there, I've arrived, And then the second one, it's similarly, and I haven't arrived, so start with that at all. I've still got many, many lessons, some of them even more coming to the forefront. And then, you know, looking back at the aphorisms of Patanjali, I mean, when you first met me, when I was 18, I'd just discovered the Aetherius Society the day before I discovered it through my good friend and yours, John Holder. I'd found another book called Raja Yoga by Vivekananda. And I'd actually decided to dedicate my life to that book. And then the next day I heard about the Aetherius Society. I had decided to go for samadhi then. And then the next day I found the society, and that was more important. And it is more important, and it's much greater. And although there was a slight disappointment, strangely, in one way, because I had to give up on this journey to my own samadhi. But it's a much, not for long, because it's so much greater and I've got there. And that's a bit of a long-winded thing. But the point is, though, that it's a bit like this. It's a bit like somebody, what I found, and it's in this book, and it's very clear from Vivekananda, who himself is an ascended master now, that when you get to the highest state that I mentioned, the seedless samadhi, where in the Mars Sector 6 terminology, the higher chakras below the crown center are cold, blue and cold, pink and cold. He describes them in detail in the sixth freedom. Then you are liberated in the old terminology. Now we'd say you're ready to ascend. I actually believe, Chrissy, that if Dr. King had entered this state that he described so brilliantly in the Nine Freedoms, and he was a terrestrial person like you and me, he would have been ready to ascend there and then. He wouldn't have, that would be it. He qualified right there with that one state, because that's the stage which you need to enter to ascend. Now, whether one would choose to do it, especially now, at that moment, or whether one would pick another time, would be that's a different matter. But you would then be ready. But the states below it, and mine is way below it, as I'm stressing, you've still got lessons to learn. And Vivekananda says, I think he calls the liberated state Asam Prajnata, and below that Samprajnata. So the lower one, Samprajnata, Samadhi with seed, Samadhi where the power is still warm, if you like, that state you can still fall, he says. You have not arrived. And you still have lessons to learn, and sometimes, some of us, many of them. So that's a very interesting, and this is the most fascinating thing to me, actually, the journey from the one to the other. But having said that, that's one thing I must stress. You haven't arrived, you've got many lessons to learn, you still got the weaknesses, you still got the desires, the things that you shouldn't have, even some maybe some fears, maybe, and so on. They haven't all suddenly gone if you reach the level I've reached. Not at all. But you also have new eyes. There's a great Proust quote, which eludes me, but I think it's something like, the secret of is not to look at new vistas, but to look through new eyes, or something like that. It's the way you look at something. So what I'm finding now, I can look at something I've known for 50 years and suddenly I see its meaning. And particularly that's true of the Aetherius Society teachings and of what we do. And so, yes, in that way, there's been a massive change. And I think probably you've noticed it. And I think probably anyone who knows, works with me or knows me has probably noticed that. I've certainly noticed it. I can suddenly see something that, oh, yeah, that's what that means. It's like these words the Master Aetherius used that we talked about in a couple of shows ago, the safety valve. God's built in a safety valve. You know, I've read that before and it didn't. And then it's like, in those two words is an absolutely fantastic description of why we go to other realms, why we reincarnate, why the whole system that exists on Earth, which in a way is an aberration, they don't do that on other planets or in this solar system, is necessary. It's a safety valve to prevent, as Master Aetherius talks about it, negativization of creation. But that, I can suddenly see what it means. So that's one way, yes. You can see into, I think Wordsworth said, you see into the life of things.
Thank you, Richard. That's very, very helpful.
And it's very hard to explain because most people don't even try to explain it. And I could see why they don't. I mean, you can understand it. And Ramakrishna has had this beautiful parable, you know, I'm sure it's a more elevated state than my states, but of a master climbing a wall and looking over the wall into the sort of the garden of enlightenment. I can't remember the exact wording. And one of his disciples is watching him. And then the master looks round and the disciple sees the expression on his master's face. And it's so blissful. It tells him everything. All he sees is the expression. And then the master jumps over the wall and into the garden. But because of that one expression, the student follows the path of the master and he himself starts to climb that wall. And, you know, that's a brilliant parable because you really, it's like this. I was talking to a good friend of mine, Jamie Bates, about it. And I said to him, if you can imagine going to Australia and for the first time and you see Australia and then you come back to the UK where we are, and you have a good friend who's never been to Australia but has read numerous books about it, guidebooks, tourist books. He really knows all about Australia from geography lessons and so on, but he's never been there. And you come back from Australia and you start to describe Australia and he starts correcting you. He says, oh, no, 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 it's not like that. It's like this. And according to the books I've read, I don't think you've even been there. And maybe he doesn't believe you've been to Australia because of these books, but you've been there and you know you've been there. And that's like an extreme example. It's very hard to, you're not talking about a theory or even a study or even a belief or even a faith. It's a direct experience.
Richard, a two-part question. Once you've had your experience and you entered this realm of super consciousness and then you have to return to all your duties and responsibilities. Number one, was that hard to do? And number two, did that give you a better understanding of how our master operated? Obviously at a much higher level, you're not claiming to be at that level at all, but he would go into these high states and then come back and carry on with the work. But does it give you a better understanding of how he operated and how difficult that must have been for him?
I wouldn't want to claim, I get the question. I wouldn't want to claim that I really understand how difficult it was for him at all, because he's on such a different level and so much more advanced and didn't even have to be here. But I must say, you do want to get back into it. And don't forget, it is a trance state. And of that, I'd be absolutely definite. It's a self-induced, it's a controlled one, but it has to be a trance state. And I know why that is. And it is, you know, you do think, God, isn't that marvelous? But at the same time, it's a great effort. So I suppose I'm maybe because I've spent so much time with him and I'm so trained by him, I just take it as read. And because I also think it wasn't really mainly for my benefit anyway, but to share and to show people this path works. You know, we've been told by the Master Aetherius that quickly, not easily, will you don the crowns of adeptship. And this is in the Five Temples of God. And basically saying if we really are successful in carrying out the tasks of the Aetherius Society. But he says quickly, not easily. And so it's no longer a slow path. If you're at the higher end, shall we put it that way, of the Aetherius Society and engaged fully and in a committed way, and I'm one of those, not the only one by any means, but one of those who has been for decades without a break at all at any time in terms of taking, leaving and going off and then coming back. Nothing like that ever since I joined. You know, so if you're engaged in that, you're kind of programmed to it. So I just took it as a thing, right, this is a wonderful thing. And my main trepidation is how people might react, not because I care what they think or believe. Personally, I don't at all. But, you know, I don't want to cause any disturbances or confusions among anyone or worries or people troubled. Should I believe this or should I not? And that's why I'm stressing here. You don't have to. I don't mind. It doesn't matter. You know, it's fine. And it's also fine to not know. And if you don't know, that's absolutely fine. But that would be my answer to that, Chrissy, I think.
Thank you. And do you find that you're sort of yearning to return to that state on some level?
You know, there's one thing I discovered, and then I found, I'm not saying I hadn't read it before, among the Master's teachings, is that when you raise the Kundalini, start to raise it to the heart center and some of those the centers below the Christ center and the crown, you start to experience imperturbable bliss, but you then go on, as he put it, to enlightenment. And so I think this is a big thing. I think a lot of yogis, I do think this, by the way, I think that people in the Aetherius Society, for one, I can only talk about the Aetherius Society with experience because that's what I've done in this life anyway. It may take them longer to get to samadhi if they get it, whether it be in this life or even another one, but it may take them longer than it would have done on another path. But I believe they'll be nearer to ascension because the practices we're doing, we're burning up our karma much more than the old yogi was. The old yogi was focused on themselves. They were, as I mentioned earlier, indifferent to evil because it was in the way of their development. Not because they didn't want, you know, they shouldn't help, as Mars Sector 6 points out, you should help evil beings, evil ones. Not, you know, that's why you fight it, to fight it because it's wrong and also to help those engaged in it. So they were just focused on that. We aren't. We're focused on service to others at all costs. So many things are happening and the practices we do are very transmuting practices. Prayer is a very transmuting practice, for example. So the energy is being raised and lifted all the time so that when we get there, I think we are in a different position. I think I've probably drifted away from your question there, Chrissy.
No, I think that's fine. I think that's fine.
Do I want to get back to it? Isn't that what you were asking?
Yes, you have a yearning to return to that state, but I think you did answer it.
Yes. Yes, I'm so programmed, though, to service through, and those sort of tests have come before. You know, I've had the desire for that right from the get-go. I mentioned the first day I heard about the Aetherius Society, it was although it was much greater and it's turned out to be far better, there was a kind of a sacrifice made in theory, at least, in that I then said, well, I can't focus only on my own development, which I had decided to do the day before. Whether I'd have done it is another question. Who'll know? It doesn't matter now because in the end, at the age of 70, I've got there anyway to some degree.
Thank you. Richard, I have another question. I'm sorry, all these questions.
Then get to the Master Jesus, which is what we're here to talk about. Well, yes, yeah.
Just one short question. And this is from someone who's obsessed with words.
Okay.
And you're a writer, a very good writer, I know. But the way you described your realization, your cosmic consciousness experience was so beautiful, so poetic, and with profound concepts. And my question is, did you write it immediately afterwards? Did it just come sort of through you, or did you have to work hard to craft the words?
I wrote it, and Alison, who's with me now and was with me then, will bear this out. I wrote it on the day it happened. So it was afterwards, of course. I knew exactly what to write. It wasn't channeled in any sense whatsoever at all from any other source. It was purely a result, but I was still in, if you like, the enshrouded. I was fortunate. We were in a very good place. So we were actually in Tenerife, as it happens, where most people go for sort of partying and holidays. But we were doing something a bit different. Alison was actually with me when she was doing practices at the same time. We had a very quiet room with a terrace. It was perfect conditions. We were completely undisturbed. And so although I was well out of the state, obviously I couldn't have written at all, I was still immersed in the energies of the experience when I wrote it.
Well, thank you for explaining that. So shall we, in the last few minutes, return to the main topic?
Yes, and then we will say that we're going to carry on this program about the master, what the Master Jesus wants us to do, in a part two as well, to realize our divinity. Yes, Chrissy, please.
So would you like me to discuss the first prayer? Shall we discuss the first prayer?
Start with the first prayer at the end of the first blessing. Yeah.
Okay, I will start by reading that, which quite a number of our listeners will know off by heart, of course. It's the first part. Almighty Father of all creation, let your light flow through this world now. Let it shine into the hearts and minds of men now, so that all may look within and see the glory of thine everlasting being. So, Richard, how do you think it's possible for us to see the glory of God's everlasting being?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's such a wonderful thing, isn't it? And it's, you know, growing up in the, and it's the thing that turned me to yoga and the Eastern teachings, because, I won't talk about my background, really, but I was brought up in the Christian religion and so on, was this concept that was coming out of yoga that you could see God, you could know God, and you could see God. And it's a wonderful thing. It's not believe in God, it's not have faith in God, and how do you do it? And funnily enough, this prayer, this is the one I think that Dr. King does comment on a bit, and he did so actually not in his lectures that are available, that we used to sell on the album. Anyway, now it's all on Audio Cloud, which I strongly recommend people to. But in his lecture delivered before that in London in 1959, he said, it would be absurd to try and see God as something outside of ourselves. We have to see it within us. And when we're able to do that, that it's within us, without us, and beyond us, it is all, and the Master Jesus brilliantly termed it the absolute. But we have to see it within us. This is now my words. I haven't yet quoted. I'm going to ask you to read exactly what Dr. King said. And he described what it would take to contact the God source within us in a very honest and unequivocal manner, which only a master of his caliber could do. And yet at the same time, being Dr. King and giving these explanations in a way, this was his genius, wasn't it? Simple enough for us to understand. It was very encouraging for those not able yet to accomplish this. And I think that'd be a good thing to end on. So I'm going to introduce you, Chrissy, please, to read these words from Dr. King, which he was commenting on the passage you've just read. And I think they're very encouraging for people, whether or not they're going to enter Samadhi in this life.
Thank you, Richard. So this is from our master's lecture. So that all may look within, contact the God source within themselves, and send this power throughout the whole earth. Because when you have contacted this source, this spark of God within you, then you are able, really, to send forth great power unto all men upon earth, and great love and great inspiration and so on when you've contacted this God source. To do it correctly means years and years and years of practice, lives of practice, so that one may get into a state of meditation, and from there into a state of samadhi, and from there even into a deeper state than samadhi, so that the soul may then be bathed in the light of the Spirit of God within. And then one comes out of this state, and one has great enlightenment and wisdom. That is the correct way to do it. But we needn't wait until then. Virtually, while we're on the path, we can be of service. We can be of service by making an attempt to, and not belittling our attempts, by the way. We can never be of service to man while we belittle our own abilities or the abilities of the higher powers through us. We must be humble, yes, but it's no good saying, oh, I'm nothing, therefore this will not work. One should say, within me is the spark of God. Therefore that spark of God within me will work even if I can't. That's the humble, yet definite and positive approach, outlook, to take upon these particular things. And in this prayer, we affirm virtually that power from the source gives us power to realize that within us is the source. This prayer doesn't divorce us from God, our source. It says it brings us nearer to it. It puts the source virtually within ourselves. And of course, it is there. We've made our own bodies. We chose our own conditions to come back in. We are virtually the creators and destroyers of this universe, or should I put it this way, we are the creators or destroyers of this universe. We are certainly the creators or destroyers of ourselves, our lower selves, not our real selves. So ultimately, Richard, when we say this prayer, as our master said, we are virtually affirming that power from the source gives us power to realize that within us is the source. It brings us nearer to God. Do you think, in effect, Richard, we are praying for people to enter samadhi? Would you agree with that?
Ultimately, I would. I mean, because if we really do it, we'll and beyond that cosmic consciousness, and then beyond that, you know, a state beyond anything I've ever got to, you know, the full cosmic consciousness. And of course, this goes on, does it not, as we're told in the Nine Freedoms, then, at an interplanetary existence, a Saturnian existence where they meditate for 125,000 years all the way through solar. And then we're told that the Mother Earth herself meditates. So it's a just deeper and deeper realization of that divinity within us all and within all life throughout the cosmos.
I think that's a good note on which to end, Richard. And so let's hand over to Nikki for the closing announcements.
Thank you, Chrissy.
Thank you so much, Richard and Chrissy, for explaining such experiences. Please join us on April the 16th for another exciting Aetherius Radio Live show, when more intriguing subjects will be discussed during this hour of truth. If you would like to find out more on the facts or publications mentioned in the show, details are on our website. You can connect with your hosts, Richard, through his website, richardlawrence.co.uk, and Chrissy through her website, chrissyblaze.com. We hope you enjoyed the show, and thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to your company next month.